Would like to welcome everybody to our June meeting of the Upper Trinity Groundwater Conservation District. We're going to have a hold till we start the meeting. We have a wreck outside the office, and we can't get the directors in here to have a quorum. So as soon as we have a quorum, we'll come back online and get the meeting started. Thank you for your patience. And show starting time at 2:27. I'd like to welcome everybody to the June meeting of the Upper Trinity Groundwater Conservation District. We're meeting here in our offices in Springtown, as well as online. If you're watching online and wish to speak on any of the topics on the agenda, if you'll hit the chat function so Doug will know and he can let me know. Also for those online, there's been a major accident outside our office on the highway, and there may be some other people coming here that are stuck out there that can't get here. And we had to wait till we had a quorum before we could convene the meeting. So, Director Watts, would you call roll, please, sir?
Jared Reynolds.
Here.
Bob Lusk.
Here.
Shannon Nave.
Here.
Tim Watts is here. Don Micah.
Here.
Brent Wilson.
Absent.
Mike Berkeley.
Absent at this point.
Tracy Messler.
Here.
We're having a quorum.
We do have a quorum. Everybody please rise and join me in the Pledge of the Flags. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state under God, one and indivisible. Do we have anybody that signed up for public comment?
No, sir. Not okay. To my knowledge. Is anybody signed up out there, Elena? Nope. No, sir.
Okay. Director Nave has to leave early this afternoon, so I'm going to readjust the agenda a little bit if it's all right with the board, because we have some items we probably need as many of us here as possible for. Getting down here in my agenda. Item number six under the regular agenda is discussion regarding the following potential violations to district rules and take action necessary. Well, IDs 1916 and 1111375 in Wise County, owned by Las Fresas Realty LLC. Doug?
Let me get to that one on.
I know.
No, you're good. All right. So I'm going to go through this. This is going to be, I'm going to try to get through this as quick as I can. There's a lot going on here, and there's a stack of potential violations. So Las Brisas is a subdivision west of Decatur, about halfway between Decatur and Bridgeport, south of the highway. Y'all may remember this is one of the landowners or one of the homeowners came in a few years ago, had some pretty poor quality water. We talked about it for a bit. So last year, as in March of last year, Kyle and I met with the developer as he wanted to use a couple existing wells to fill some vanity ponds within the subdivision. They've got one that they drilled for that purpose. It was under 17 gallons a minute, so it was exempt. At the time, we told him as soon as they brought a second well online, it would be a non-exempt system because they'd bring the system up to more than 17 gallons a minute. We told him all the things he would need to do, apply for an operating permit. The big issue, the big takeaway was ownership of land for an allocation under an operating permit. At the time, the developer felt that he owned a good chunk of the groundwater estate under the roads or the roads. So, you know, at the end of that meeting, we basically left. Kyle had asked him to submit us verification or proof that they actually still own the roads, because everything we found looked like they had already been turned over to the county. Never heard back from the developer. Again, that was March of last year. Last month, I got a call saying there was a the well out there that was non-equipped at the time and wasn't functioning had been equipped and was now pumping into one of the ponds. We're making it a second well, bringing the system capacity up to more than 17 gallons a minute. Staff went out there, Blaine went out there, actually found that well to be producing about 22 gallons a minute at a 5-horsepower pump installed. It was approved with a 1.5-horsepower pump and a 16 gallons a minute well back in 2009. So trying to go through this quick. There are four wells. There are some other wells out there that they could use. They're on lots. They're going to end up being people's homes. They installed a 5-horse pump. And so district rules define substantially altering a well as changing the ability of a well. If it's under 17 gallons a minute, bringing up above 17 gallons a minute is substantially altering it. District Rule 2.1A says you can't do that. District Rule 2.3A says that before you do that, you have to submit and attain approval of a new well registration. So they didn't do that. That's the first thing. Additionally, it doesn't appear that they own the streets as they felt they did. I've got a screenshot here from Kyle. Is this from the plat or is this from a deed? That's from a deed that Kyle found that had been filed in Wise County, saying the streets are public streets that have been dedicated to the county, yada, yada, yada. There's no reservation for groundwater rights. So because of that, this well, as you can see, let me turn on my laser pointer, right here in the middle of the street is on a 0.11 acre tract. This is the spacing for the current 5-horse, 22 gallons a minute. You can see, obviously, is four wells that doesn't meet spacing to, and obviously property lines. Even if they brought it back down below 17, it still wouldn't meet spacing. District Rule 4.3A states that once a well is subject to well spacing and minimum track size requirements, they must maintain that minimum track size and maintain the spacing requirements. The board could potentially require the well to be plugged if they failed to do so. Additionally, because the equipping of that well brought the system capacity, so wells used for filling ponds within the subdivision up above 17.36, they should have installed meters and attained an operating permit before they even began production. District Rule 2.9 states what requires an operating permit, and District Rule 8.1 talks about the metering of wells. So I got through this pretty quick, and I'm happy to answer any questions. But ultimately, there's, failure to submit a new well registration before submitting and putting in the bigger pump, begin production without metering the wells, beginning production without attaining an operating permit, failure to maintain the 2 acres, failure to maintain spacing requirements that were that the well was initially or had been subject to. I've got a recommendation. That includes the first major violation for altering the well without a compliant registration, $250 penalty with that. A second major violation for failure to timely meter a well, $500 penalty for that. Third major violation for failure to maintain a minimum track size, $500 penalty for that and a requirement to plug the well. A fourth major violation for failure to permit a well that does not qualify for an exemption, $1,000 penalty for that. And a requirement to submit an estimate of all water produced from those two wells that should have been metered and pay the associated fees to the district. And I'm happy to answer any questions. I know I went through that really fast.
Doug, on this one, what point did you discuss this with the developer before or after?
It was March of 2022. March of 2022.
Wells drilled at that time?
Yes, these were existing wells.
Both wells?
Yes.
So I thought you said no. Drill a new well.
No. They drilled it before we met with them several years. They had drilled a well when they first started the development. They drilled a well.
Island was drilled
before. Yeah, but the one on the island was drilled in 2009 when it was just a pasture and it was used for livestock.
I remember reading that. Yeah. So with that, have we reviewed the plat or just that deed?
We reviewed the plat.
And the plat didn't reserve groundwater, nor did the deed specify that it had been reserved.
No. No, sir.
All Has anyone online or here for you to discuss?
I don't know. Is anyone online? I don't see Mr. Malden online. I apologize. I'm going to turn this off. I'm sorry, guys. Somebody's telling me they're going somewhere on the highway is closed. I apologize. No, there's nobody online that I see.
When staff discussed this with the developer, what all, obviously it didn't go through every rule we have in our book.
Right.
What all did y'all discuss?
So we spent, he actually came in person. We went through, here's what we would need as far as, you would have to submit an application for an operating permit. We walked them through that process. We said, we would need to see that you either own the roads or own the groundwater estate under the roads. And even at that point, it was questionable whether or not it would still meet spacing requirements. But as far as allocation for an operating permit, without that, they can pump those wells for like 6 hours a year, right? There's no allocation without actually owning property, right? But they never followed up, never gave us any documentation. And then Kyle, just through searching Wise County deed records, found the deed that dedicated the roads to the county.
Did we discuss with them if they change pumps and increase?
We talked to him that no, because at the time he never mentioned that he would put a larger pump in there. We just told him that before he installed a pump in that well, he would have to get an operating permit.
So of the violations, we did discuss several of those, but
right,
not necessarily every one of those.
Right.
But he was forewarned that there was a district, there
right,
was rules.
Right.
That there were going to be requirements to.
They're very familiar with this because not only does he a developer, he also owns a home building company. So I would say we probably get at least 100 applications a year in from this gentleman.
When he deeded that road, being it's in the middle of the road, is it separate or was it just considered part of the road?
He platted a.
I see the drawing, but
there's an island. So this little diamond shape, if you look on there,
I saw that.
That's a 0.11 acre tract that's owned by the development company.
Okay.
And will eventually would have, I think, been turned over to the HOA.
So do you know what that very narrow lot is up to the right with the white square in it?
This, I think that's probably incorrect. Or was that an HOA access? I think that may be an HOA lot. Yeah, that's an HOA lot. Yeah, so this little white structure, there's a pavilion with the idea being access to this pond. And there, Blaine, isn't there like a dock that looks over that pond or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes really good.
Right.
Thank you, Doug.
Yep.
Board, have any other questions?
Like I said, I think this is the most violations we've ever stacked up and put on one situation, but it's.
What is the total penalty amount?
$2,250 and plug a well and submit production and pay, which the production, we need to find out what day they installed that pump, but that's not going to amount to a whole lot in penalties.
Would we want to establish a date certain that the well is plugged and that the penalties are paid?
Yeah. 60 days.
September 1st?
Works for me.
Did you make that in the form of a motion?
I did not, but I would be glad to.
Go ahead.
I'd like to make a motion that we would follow the general manager's recommendation with the addition of a September 1st deadline for plugging of the well, paying the penalties, and addressing the the fees for water use.
Perfect.
Do I hear a second?
That's the second.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second by Director Watts. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
Second recommendation, Doug?
You had a second recommendation, correct?
Or which one?
For the driller.
Yeah, I did. So I put that in the note. I'm sorry. Thank you for bringing that up. So in my memo, I did put a recommendation in there about the driller. I've since talked to the driller. The driller simply, and I have no reason to believe he was being untruthful. What happened, the driller said when he got out there, they called him to install a pump. He said somebody during construction had ran over the wellhead. He dug it up, fished it. He said he fished a 5-horse pump out and simply put the same size pump that was back down in hole. What likely happened is somewhere between 2009 and 20, this driller said when he started working on this well, back when the bank owned it before the developer bought it, he said at that time it had a 5-horse pump. Somewhere between then and 2016, 2017, somebody probably put a bigger pump in there without notifying the district. So my recommendation to the about the driller, I told him and was that I was not going to recommend a penalty for him, but I would like him in the future. He does a lot of pump installation and pump work in Wise County. I'd asked him that he simply call us in the future on anytime he's putting a new well pump in a well and there's any question, and he agreed to do that. And we kind of walked through the process of, you know, what I would need him to do. So I'm not making a recommendation on the driller unless you guys would like to.
Any other questions from the board on that? Any problems with it or anything? Okay. Doug, back to our public hearings, you think? Work our way through that?
I think so. I think we can get through most of these. The first one may take the longest, Tracy.
Okay. And I'll convene the public hearings at 2:43. Receive any public comments, requests to contest, and the general manager's report and recommendations regarding the following applications for permits, permit amendments, and or requests for exceptions to district's water well spacing or minimum track size requirements. Item A, applicant Blessed to the Blessed Investments with an Azle address, exception to spacing requirements at 769 Glade Park Court in Azle, Texas. Doug?
Yes, sir. So this is Deer Glade, just off Church Road and 730, kind of south of Azle, southwest of Azle. Subdivision was platted. Deer Glade was platted in 2019. Of course, Deer Ridge, y'all may remember that, those of y'all that have been on the board for years ago. Deer Glade is basically the second large phase of Deer Ridge, same developer. Deer Glade's all 2-acre lots. Been building out. We received an application in December last year for lot 12R and block 5 of Deer Glade. Staff went out, field verified the location, marked the location of the field. And the application was approved on January 13, 2023, met all spacing requirements. In late April, district staff received a call from the driller regarding the proposed well location. The driller was concerned about proximity to the high voltage power lines, and I'll show you a map in a second. It's kind of a mess of a lot. May 3rd, district received an application for exception for the lot. Applicant is requesting to drill the well in a location less than 50 feet to the property line and less than 150 feet to the nearest well, but they are proposing to drill deeper and to meet the vertical offset. So here's kind of the approved location. Let me turn the laser pointer back on. This is the approved location up here. It's a triangle-shaped lot. Approved location was back here. These blue lines are gas lines. And you can see over here, these are the high-voltage transmission lines. They've already built the house right here. They put the septic on this side of the house. Had they submitted a well application before doing that, well would have fit right here. But because the septic's on this side, the well can't go on that side of the house. Only locations that meet spacing are in the back. So The driller provided us with some recommendations from OSHA regarding, and Tim may know about more about this than I do, some recommendations from OSHA about drilling near high voltage lines. But we did talk to TDLR, and there are no requirements from the state about drilling, about being a certain distance away from those high voltage lines. So they're proposing to drill the well up here at the front of the lot, too close to this property line, too close to this well, but drilling deep enough to meet the vertical offset. My recommendation is to deny the request for an exception. And that's based on the, you know, simply, there are a lot of these developments that have bad lots. You know, the way I look at it, it's, you know, our requirements were in place long before this was platted. Had they submitted a well application earlier in the process and not waited to the last thing to do, they could have found a location. And I just personally don't like the precedent it sets, but again, it's y'all's choice. If you do choose to approve the exception, I've got several stipulations I think we should add.
Is there even a location on the lot where they can drill a well and meet our spacing and setback requirements?
Yeah, we're
at in view of the power line and the gas lines.
Drill back up.
They have an approved location that meets all spacing requirements back here.
But the exception is it's within the
50. It's within, I think, the OSHA requirement for that. So those are big transmission lines. The OSHA requirement or recommendation is 50 foot from those. And I don't know the exact measurement, but it's probably 25 to 30 foot from those power lines. So.
I wouldn't.
You wouldn't drill it?
So it is worth noting that, is it 11R? So the lot to the north, the applicant owns. They could, since they own both lots, 11R and 12R, they could put easements in place and start and file a shared well agreement to where lot 12R always has access to water from the well on lot 11R. Sorry, got tongue-tied there. That is something they could do. So it's not like they would be without water.
You had an image that had the house on it as well?
I don't think we did here.
I thought I saw one.
I think it was probably some pictures in the memo.
Okay.
But the house is right up here.
It was where the lot 12 was. That's what I
right. That's right about where the house is. It's right about here.
Have we looked into NearMap? Have we looked into the program NearMap?
No, you mentioned that to me before. We should probably look into it.
They usually fly even rural counties about 2 to 4 times a year. We can get aerial photos. So it's your position that they have the ability to get water without this exception?
Right. They could, again, because the same guy owns both 11 and 12, I've seen shared well agreements before. And the way they're written is it locks in, it's all owners, heirs, assigns, that the easement and the shared well agreement runs perpetually. So he could do something like that to where lot 12R always has access to water from the well at lot 11. Put some easements in place.
Lot 11R is 2.848 acres.
Right.
And as owner of both, he could replat it so that
he could.
He has room there.
He could also replat the two lots to make it work. Correct.
Are there structures on both lots?
I believe so.
Is there?
Yeah.
11R.
Yeah. There's an approved location right here. I don't know if it's drilled or not. Yeah, I think he signed on and signed back out. So.
You said he owns both lots?
He does, with the intention to sell. I think if the whole story was, Kyle, correct me if I'm wrong, both this gentleman and his brother-in-law live in the same subdivision. They wanted to own lots and live next to each other. They bought these two lots and their wives didn't want to move. So I think they're building houses and going to sell the lots.
But
that was the story we got.
At this point, neither of the two lots have been sold, correct? To our knowledge?
Is that where you're going with this process? And maybe, you know.
19057
is drilled a lot on lot 11.
Okay.
R is drilled.
This
one's drilled.
Okay. Precedence that will be set. Yeah, I just, you know, I don't think since I've been here, we've approved an exception on a 2-acre lot that was platted after 2009. I mean, that would require board actions. And we haven't done that since I was here. And it's a slippery slope, right? Because everybody's got a story. You know, I mean, I kind of get it, but I don't, but like, you know, it's not hard to pick up the phone. It's not hard to submit. I mean, they didn't have to wait till the very last minute to submit the application, right? They could have submitted at the same time they submitted the septic permit. And then, you know, we could have seen, look, cause the septic permits, they could have put, there's room to put that on the other side. Cause right where the septic is on the side of the house, there's plenty of room. They could have drilled the well there and met all of our requirements.
As I recall, where we've had requests for exceptions on 2 acres, the board has consistently moved them back where they're not, where the exception's correct, cured.
Right. Again, I don't think I've brought one to the board since I've been here in 8 years. Not a domestic 2-acre lot.
We've had a couple that were under 2 acres.
Yeah, but this is a 2-acre lot, right?
And you're correct. We're going to have more and more of these odd shapes that potentially could cause them.
Right. Right. You know, it's, again, you can't make somebody, you know, get all their ducks in a row and get their all the permits in place before they start building, but it'd be nice if they would.
Board, have any other questions?
They were talking about drilling this well deeper to offset.
Yeah, for the spacing to the well to the south, because it's only about 110 feet to the well from the south. So they're saying drilling deeper to meet the vertical offset. And so it would just be a property line spacing. But he could, like you said, like somebody mentioned, he could replat it to make that meet spacing. He'd only have to shift it 10 feet, 5 feet maybe. Right here. Oh, it is, right. I see that. And I don't know if he can't move it really. They can't really move it back, can they?
Just so we've got all the cards on the table, you said if the board was inclined to grant it, you had a number of conditions.
Right.
What are they?
Fully penetrate the aquifer, drill to probably, I think the model indicates 500 and some change, but I think there's a nearby well that's drilled to 600 foot. So drilling to at least, you know, 520, 550, allowing the district to log the well. Possibly even open hole log the well would be my preference. Monitoring well, scaling it back to 8 gallons a minute, something like that.
In theory, if we decrease the size of the pump, then the cone of depression and the setback requirements decrease as well, right?
Right.
So we could do that.
So if you're going to approve the exception, those are I would also probably put some stipulations on completion of the well. Obviously, it would have to be pressure cemented, but we could make them even complete it to higher standards and just a simple, you know, surface lee. We could make them put a slab around it and some other stuff to protect it.
At a minimum, we'd want to make sure they meet TDLR requirements.
Right, right.
If he's doing vertical and he's going to the Trinity rather than the Plexi.
Correct.
We're still worried about impacts the neighbors in Kona Depression,
right?
Greater depth.
There is a well. You can see. So this well is only 200 foot. The well that's too close to, but this is a 600 foot well right here.
We're okay on spacing on that.
Right, we are. So it wouldn't be a spacing exception to other wells if they drilled and completed to the depth. So we'd want to make sure that they plugged it. You know, it's one thing to drill, and I mean, you can drill a 600 foot well, but you know, I've seen some drillers dump gravel all the way to 10 feet from the surface. So we'd want to make sure it's plugged. You know, it's got they seal that annular seal off, that annular space off it, you know, 450, 350 feet, something like that, at least, if not deeper.
EDLR's requirement from the property line, 50 feet?
It's 50 feet. You can encroach upon that if the well is pressure cemented. The annular space is sealed with grout, pressure cement, trimmy pipe method down to 100 feet or the top of water. So I'd make them do it to 100 feet since they're not going into the Biloxi. And then seal off the annular space probably 350, 400 foot to make sure you're not pulling any water from anything above that.
Ultimately, this can be solved with some paperwork if replatting and like that.
You could solve it with paperwork, correct.
Tim, if I could ask, what is generally the cost for a 260 foot well and is a 600 foot well roughly double that? So they're going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 26,000.
Yes.
And probably they move their septic system for cheaper than that. Yeah. So they have several viable options.
Right.
They could do an easement and tie into the well on 11R.
Right.
They could move the septic, move their well back far enough to cure the exception issues.
Right.
And put in that. Or they could pressure cement 100 feet, fully complete.
Only if we grant that one, we have to grant.
And these are the three options that they've got. And only if we grant that, correct. But, and limit the pump's capacity to less than 17.
I mean, not just 70. I would say, you know, it's y'all's decision, but I would say less than, I mean, I'd put it way less than that.
Under 10 at least.
Yeah. I mean, you got to do, you know, if you're asking for an exception, you know, you should, if you're going to grant it, you ought to, they're already going to be under 17, right? It's got to be less.
Let me go this round. Does the board simply want to take a motion and uphold the general manager's recommendation and reject the application? Or do we want to offer, here's your options?
You can take official action, or you could direct staff to meet with them and say, here, you can do this, you can do this, you can do this. If you don't want to do any of those things, then we can come back next month. And you can plead your case to the board, and we're going to put all these stipulations on there. Okay. And I would go back to say, you know, again, we talk about completion standards, not just pressure cement it, but we could require them to put a slab around it and do all kinds of things to.
Go ahead.
There's four paths forward. One, they could replat. Two, they could work out something with the existing well and have an easement. Three, they could move their septic system. Or fourth, we could grant an exception with the caveats aforementioned. I like the idea of letting it go back to the staff to talk to the owner before a decision is made.
Everybody comfortable with that?
Yes.
I'll entertain a motion that we table taking action on this, direct staff to get back with the property owner, clearly outline the four routes available to them, and for them to indicate insufficient time for our July meeting.
Which is quick turnaround.
Which is a quick turnaround.
3 weeks.
Which is a quick turnaround. So we can
have this one resolved one way or another. So,
works for me.
Fair to clear to everybody? And yeah, we've tossed it back to staff and trying to get the property owner to make the chooses poison.
And there's no guarantee we'll grant.
Right.
And there's no guarantee that we'll grant it even in
that. That's the conversation we'll have. Is there's no guarantee that it will be granted, but if it is, it's going to have all these additional stipulations on it.
You make that motion, say you'd entertain that motion.
I'll make the motion if you wish.
I'll second it then.
Okay. I mean it. And I made the motion. Director Reynolds seconded it. Any further discussion?
I have a question.
Sure, go ahead.
Do they know that they were coming to this meeting to deny yes. that request?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And then why wouldn't you drill the well in that approved location?
Too close to the power lines.
Is it because it's a safety hazard or? Okay.
It's safety hazard for the drill rig, which is a big antenna near the power
arcing.
Okay. All right. Got it.
Power mass, they're the biggest power lines that they make, right? It's the big transmission lines.
So. It'd be a 144, wouldn't it?
No, it's bigger than that. What was it, Kyle? Yeah. Was it the 144? Yeah, I think it's like 250 something. Yeah, it's just the big ones.
It's non-survivable.
Right.
At that level.
Right.
So, that lot's got a lot of issues on it.
Right.
So. Imagine why I said no.
You wouldn't want to look at those massive transmission lines? And it's got how many? Four gas lines running across it? Yeah.
We got a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Any other questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Doug, back to you. If possible, make contact with him tomorrow.
Well.
Because it is a quick turnaround this time.
I'll ask him to come in and sit down. It'd be easier to talk to him that way.
Item B, Aqua Texas, Fort Worth address. They have two operating permit applications. You want to handle them together?
Correct. Yeah, I think we can do that.
Okay.
I got recommendations on each one at the end of each one. After
okay, we'll do them separate motions, but I'll let you present them both at one time.
Yeah.
Let Matt.
These are two of the 40 some odd operating permit applications they've submitted. We've asked for clarification. Matt and I have talked about this a good bit. Clarification on justification, I think is the right word for the request. We've only gotten two that we really feel good about. This one is System 008W. It's in Wise County. It's just southeast of Decatur. They've got four existing wells. They're not asking for new wells, not asking for any exception. They're just asking for an operating permit to increase their annual allocation. This is one of the systems. Both of these are systems that overpumped their permit last year. So January 2023, received an application for an operating permit. This is one that they overpumped their permit last year. Annual allocation for this system comes out to almost 600 million gallons, and that's based on 1,800 acres, 713 foot of aquifer thickness, deducting off the applicant's HUP, which is 18 million, and BKV, which used to be Devon, has a HUP vault out there for just over 25 million. So you deduct that off, you get 596 million gallons. They're asking for 22 million gallons per year. This is based on increased connections. They actually requested 22 million gallons a year, but the math that they provided in the documentation didn't add up. 350 gallons per connection per day, 365 days, 269 connections, minus the $18 million historic use permit comes out to 16,310,750 gallons rather than 22 million gallons. And you can see that they're here. We went through this back and forth, make sure we did it right, but their math just didn't add up. So because of that, my recommendation is the 16 million gallons per year, which is still more than they overpumped the permit last year. So I think it'll get them where they need to go. And this is based on what they actually provided. And my recommendation is to approve this one in the amount of 16,310,750 gallons per year. The next one is system 009W. This is also in Wise County. It's way over on the east side of the county. It's a smaller subdivision. It's been there for a while. They have one existing well. Same situation. They overpumped their permit last year, not asking for new well, not asking for exception, just increasing their permit. Their total allocation could be about 81 million gallons, and that's based on acreage of the CCN, aquifer, actually depth of well, which isn't completed fully completed through the aquifer, and then their operating or historic use permit of 3.4 million gallons. They're requesting 4.108 million gallons. Again, their justification, the math and their justification didn't add up. They used their highest year, which was 2011, of 451.6 gallons per connection per day, which is pretty high. But they did provide data that showed that times 365 times 44 connections, which is what they state is the connections in 2022. That comes to 3.474 million, minus 3.474 million gallons, comes out to 3.778 million gallons. Not the the 4.1 that they requested. My recommendation is approval of the lower volume, 3,778,696 gallons. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Board, have any questions of staff?
I just question, you have the 350 gallons per minute per day, or excuse me.
Per connection, per right. Connection. Right.
Showed that there was 450 something
gallons. Well, that's two different systems. That's the numbers they provided us, Tim. We didn't come up with those. So the second system, they provided us the number right here. This is literally copy and pasted from their consultants provided us. And they come out 451.6 gallons per day. You go to this first system, they used 350 gallons per connection per day. So I'm simply using their numbers that they provided, just corrected the math. The math that they did not work.
So in other words, if that production, Aqua, steps up two-thirds the way through the summer,
right,
and they're heading towards an overpumpage,
right, they can apply again.
Apply again at what?
To increase their operating permit.
But before a penalty is issued.
Yeah. We called them, we met with them, and Matt was here. We met with them last year, 5 months before the end of the year. All they had to do was submit an application, and they never would have got penalties for that, but they didn't.
Okay, but my point is I just,
future
and here on out,
right.
That the noise is heard.
Right, yeah.
You don't have to have these overage.
No, all hearings. Exactly, and we do just like we always do. We'll contact them if we get there, and when we start getting reports and we're like, hey, you've pumped 60% of your permit, you may want to think about upping your permit. Now, if they don't, we can't fill out the application for them. If they don't do it, I mean, this one, they started submitting these in December, and of the 40 they've submitted, they've only given us what we need for two of them. I mean, I can't, you know, I mean, it's not what I would do, but I can't hold their hands and do their work for them.
Right. Odds are, Tim, we're going to see some of those same people again.
Right.
Their numbers.
You know, and I think the initial information that was provided with those was overthinking. And also, I mean, they were saying connections increase, but when they provided a graph with the statement that said connections increase, and the graph actually showed connections decreasing. So it didn't add up.
Just trying to.
No. I get it. No. I got it. We, and you can ask Matt, and I know he's on the other side, but how many other districts in the state reach out the way we have and tried to get these guys ahead of time?
No.
Nobody else goes to the lengths we do to try to prevent them from violating our rules.
If we approve this, are we going to put a stipulation that they have a mathematical tutorial?
That's the former math teacher over here. He couldn't resist.
Sorry, Matt. I had to. I know it wasn't you. You and I have had multiple conversations about this, and I know you've talked to Kyle quite a bit about
it. Matt, do you agree with the adjustments on the math? Or have no problems with
it? I trust them.
Okay. All right.
Both of the volumes are still greater than the volume they pumped last year with room to grow. Right. So it's not like, you know, it's not like they overpump their permit by 1 million gallons and we're giving them 1.2. They overpump their permit by 1 million and we're giving them 3. It's that kind of situation. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So we should avoid that situation.
Right.
This Tim, you actually asked a question I was going to have Doug go through. Next month, you guys will have SA1 reports. You'll check the numbers. You will see if there's somebody, if there's anybody, and who is in danger of busting the permits.
Right. Yeah.
And then what steps, and I know this a little bit off topic here, but I think we do need to cover it. Huh. What steps are we taking to try to get their attention?
So what we'll do is once we get reports in, of course, Jay enters everything and he does a check. And as things come in, if it's more than 40, there's always more production in the second half of the year because of July and August, right? In September. Mm-hmm. So if they're 40% of their permit volume, then we'll give them a holler and say, hey, you might want to consider.
The house too, I think. Yeah.
Moot somebody.
I did. Yeah. You might want to consider submitting an operating permit. So just that's like what we did last year. We'll do that again.
And I'll point out, we had, I believe, a couple operating permits. I believe in January, there were people that were in danger of busting their historic use permits,
right,
or their operating permits, and they filed them and completed them in December.
Right.
So they technically were trying to cure their situation before the end of the year.
Right.
And that's what staff's going to try to do this year. But
we even had some last year that we reached out to. They submitted the operating permit, and they still overpumped their operating permit.
Yeah, they didn't request enough.
Again, you know, you can't.
Tim, unfortunately, it's a horse and water situation. And yes, there's one particular one I don't think we want to have to sit through the tongue lashing again. And quite frankly, that one's some complicated one. I'm not sure how we get around that one. They don't have a CCN.
I don't think that's the sticky part. I think the sticky part is that one. They're losing 80% of their water to line loss. Anyway, that's another
conversation. Do we want to open that conversation today or want to
say no, that one? No, I don't think we do.
Okay. All right. Heard general manager's recommendations. Are there any other further questions? Let's take them one at a time, which is system ID 008W in Wise County.
I make a motion we approve the recommendation of general manager.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second by Director Watts. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Item B2, system ID 009W. Refer the general manager's recommendation. Do I hear a motion?
I'll make the same motion.
Motion by Director Michael, second by Director Watts. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Item C, Weatherford College, 225 College Park Drive in Weatherford. Doug?
Yes, sir. This one's pretty straightforward. Weatherford College is looking to drill a new water well to add to their system. This is all, it's all non-potable use. It's all outside irrigation use. For their property. So they're proposing to drill a 50-gallon a minute well, total depth 550 foot, 10 horsepower pump, making 30 to 50 gallons a minute. Required spacing is 1,000 feet from the nearest well and 250 feet from the nearest property line. Meets all spacing requirements. That's not before the board today. Just want to note that this alley is actually Weatherford College's property. It's not an actual street. It's an alley. This further line over here is our property line. So Jacob was you, right? Jacob is actually out there and he's measured this. This is 250 foot from that property line over there. So it meets all property lines, meets all spacing. They're asking for their allocation based on 105 acres that they own. GAM is 517 feet for the thickness of the aquifer. They're drilling 550, so they're going to fully penetrate the aquifer, so they get the full allocation. You've got to deduct off their 12.6 million gallon historic use permit, and They still have 14.5 million gallons left, potentially under an operating permit. They're asking for 10 million gallons a year. That's a little bit of a rounding. That request is based on the addition of about 238 new irrigation zones and some increased irrigation in their other areas. I think the actual number was like 9.9. I mean, it was maybe a few thousand gallons. They just rounded up to 10 million. My recommendation is approval as presented in the amount of 10 million gallons as requested.
Board have any questions? Nobody online, I take it?
I don't see anyone, though.
No, and nobody chatting anyway, correct?
I don't see anybody. No, sir.
Okay.
I don't have a question about the well, but I've got another question. Have we had any discussions with them about collecting rainwater?
Did we bring that up? I don't think we brought that up with them. We should bring that up to them.
Yeah.
Because it would save a whole lot of water. They've got a lot of building, a lot of rooftops.
And a lot of, they do. Matter of fact, I did a little math on that.
Uh-huh.
On the, let me find it.
Hey, Doug, this is Philip Burgess, representing Weatherford College.
Yeah. That's one of their engineers, I believe.
Over the workforce building, there's about 34,000 square feet of roof.
Yeah, they could catch a good bit of the water they need.
650,000 gallons per year based on their average annual rainfall.
Right.
That'll be a great place to showcase one, too.
Right. Right. So Philip, just you might want to drop that in. And also, it might be worth noting that the district has a rainwater harvesting grant program.
Surprise.
Yeah.
Sure, I'll relay that information to the college on their future projects and see if that is something they would like to consider.
Yep.
Thank you. There's somewhere like 6,000 students there off and on.
Right.
You know, it'd be a good place to show water conservation at work.
Right, right. I have always thought when we started this that schools were the best place for these types of projects.
Good point, Bob. Board has heard the general manager's recommendation. Any further questions? Chair would entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve. I'll second.
Motion by Director Reynolds, second by Director Nave. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
I recommend that when you contact them, that we do promote the harvesting.
Well,
at multiple buildings.
Yep. Item D, Homestead Weatherford LLC, mailing address in Plano, system ID 183-P. Doug?
Yes, sir. 183-P, it's Homestead Weatherford LLC. It's an RV park south of Weatherford off Tin Top. They operate three wells. They submitted application earlier this year, last month. They actually, another one that overpumped last year, correct, Kyle? Again, they've got 14 and a half acres. Wells fully penetrate the aquifer. They've got a 1.752 million gallons per year historic use permit, and they've got 1,066,820 gallons left that they could get under an operating permit. And they're requesting that full volume. And this is based on their actual 2022 water use. I think there's a little bit of a 4.5% fudge factor over what they actually produced last year. But they are requesting the full volume they can be allocated.
Let me double check that. They're right at the limit of what they can get, correct?
If we give them this, it's everything. And they're pumping right at the limit of what they can get.
And that's close to what they pumped total last year.
Correct. Right.
We'll see them again probably.
Maybe.
At some point. Okay. But they're requesting what they're within the limit to
right.
get.
Right. These folks they're pretty good to deal with, pretty easy to deal with folks.
At that point, their only option is conservation efforts.
Right.
Okay. Any other questions from the board? Nobody online?
No, sir.
Board, chair to entertain a motion to accept the general manager's recommendation. Is that a motion?
It is not.
Okay.
Do we know if Weatherford has water lines in front of them?
I don't think Weatherford has lines that far down Tintop. No, I don't know. I see Matt shaking his head. That's kind of your neck of the woods.
Yeah.
So there is no public water supply available?
No.
Not from Weatherford?
Private level. Right.
Okay.
They have no way to expand either?
I think they're landlocked.
Up or down on Tintop, are they?
3052.
Yeah, I didn't blow that up big enough so you can see those cross streets. Matt, you know about what the biggest cross road right is right there?
You turn at the red barn, right?
Yeah, right. It's a few miles. Give me 1 second. I'm fine if you want me to, Shannon. You bear with me.
There's nope. I don't think there's any water. Good.
Okay.
Thank you. You want me to find it on the map closer?
Nope.
Okay.
He's determined that you can't find any water lines down there either. So.
Okay.
The closest cross road is Cedar Ridge.
Yeah, Cedar Ridge.
So. What's the board's pleasure?
Motion
from Director Reynolds for the general manager's recommendation. Is that correct? Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second by Director Watts. Any further?
Before we vote, I would like to make sure they know that this is the limit and that they can be fined and so forth so that they know not to put a new swimming pool in or something like this.
Correct. Yeah. I think they're aware this is the most they can get. Kyle's, like I said, they're pretty easy to work with, and Kyle's talked to them quite a bit.
Okay.
They understand.
I just want to make sure it's on the record.
Right.
Because we don't have any other options either at this point. That's
right.
It.
But I'm hoping they'll do some conservative.
Any other discussion, questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Item E, Crescent Crossroads Municipal Utility District Number 2, 5189 East I-20, Willow Park, System ID 199P. Director Reynolds, I believe you have to recuse yourself, correct? Therefore, it'll take all five of the remaining of us to approve this. Doug?
So Crescent Crossroads Mud number 2, first I want to talk a little bit. My recommendation at the end is going to be contingent upon reviewing some documentation that was sent to me today. We had requested, the original Crescent Crossroads Mud number 2 boundary is down by Crescent in the Crescent Crossroads area. They provided us with an exhibit showing this, new area, which is kind of off Kelly Road. And so we had requested the actual minutes or the resolution or the order annexing that into the mud. They sent that to Kyle really right about the time we were sent out there looking at the accident. I had not had a chance to review that. I have no doubt that it's fine, but my recommendation is going to be contingent upon my review of that documentation. I just want to start off with that. So they're actually looking to drill 6 new wells. These are 3 twinned well sites, so a Twin Mountains or Trinity well and a Paluxy well, each of the sites. And there is one existing well that they're going to bring into the system. And these are for new developments dense developments. I think there's a quarter acre lot developments, I believe, down in that area. So what I've got this broke down into the wells they're proposing, the deep wells and the shallow wells, the Trinity or Twin Mountain wells, wells 19, 674, 684, and 689. They're looking for 80 gallons a minute. Expect to drill to 720 feet, 20 horsepower pump, making 50 to 80 gallons a minute. All the wells meet spacing, meet all the property line spacing at 500 feet, meet all the well-to-well spacing at 1750. Paluxy wells 19, 675, 688, and 691, they're looking to get 30 gallons a minute. That spacing is 500 foot from the nearest well, 150 foot from the nearest property line. Again, the proposed locations meet all spacing requirements. So I'm not seeking any board action on the registrations or no exceptions. Just kind of wanted to show you guys the within the boundary. These are the maps showing they meet red lines are property lines. Blue dots are wells, so you can see they meet all spacing requirements. This is the existing well, but it meets the vertical offset to the bigger well, and it meets spacing to the shallow well. So no exceptions.
That existing well is a Paluxy?
Yes, it is a Paluxy. The existing well they drilled, kept it to Paluxy well, kept it under 17.36 gallons a minute, and used it for some spec homes. I believe they intend to drop a bigger pump in there, but they know they need to submit the application and stuff to do that. But this is, and it'll meet spacing when they do that as well. This is simply, it will be included on the permit, so it will be part of their system. Their annual allocation is a large property. So we use the mud boundary, which is about 2,600 acres, a little over 2,656.16 acres. Aquifer is 705 foot thick there. They're proposing to drill 720, so they're going to penetrate the aquifer. There are three historic use permits within the boundary of the mud. These are all I'm drawing a blank. Bedrock. I knew it started with a B. Bedrock. So these are oil and gas use, old wells that have been there for a while. So you do that, do the math, subtract out those permit volumes, they could get up to 727,279,389 gallons per year. At this time, they're requesting 53,800,000 gallons. This is based on 421 connections initially at 350 gallons per connection per day. And my recommendation is approval of the permit application as submitted. Again, contingent upon my review of that documentation to verify that the property has actually been annexed in and is part of the mud. Happy to answer any questions.
2600, is that the entire
land? That is the entire mud boundary.
Including Crescent proper or?
Let me show you a map, Shannon. Bear with me. Come here. There it is. So Crescent proper, 377, and Kelly Road's up here. And this is the mud boundary that's been added in.
Top one by itself is 2,600.
Right. Yeah. So we actually, because they're not connected, we actually, it's all Crescent Mud. Crescent Mud will have two separate permits. This, I think internally we're going to call it Crescent Mud, Crescent Crossroads Mud North and Crescent Crossroads Mud number two South. Because these they're not connected, so they'll have to be two separate permits. But yeah, this is the bound of the 2,600 acres.
Board have any other questions? Are you representing Crescent Mud?
Yes, sir.
Do you need to speak?
No.
Okay. I'm just giving you the opportunity.
So far, you're on track. Can you just sit and be quiet?
Board have any questions with him? For the general manager's recommendation, what's the board's pleasure?
I say we go ahead and make a motion to approve our general manager's recommendations contingent upon the
general manager's acceptance and review of the documentation. Okay. All right. Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Second by Director Micah. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries.
And I will.
I've got you down.
And I will review that documentation first thing in the morning. I just have not had a chance to review it, so I wanted to make that known. I have no doubt that it's fine, but I want to look at it first.
That's fine, too. And shall I adjourn the public hearings at 3:32? Just go through the rest of the agenda in order, Doug.
Works for me.
Okay. Consent agenda, which are normal and customary routine items of non-controversial nature, including approval of minutes from the last board meeting, bank statement ending May 31st, investment report, payment of bills and invoices through today, expenses through today, and approval of request for extension of applications submitted to today. Board members can pull anything off the consent agenda and be discussed and handled separately. Do we need to pull anything off? If not, do I hear a motion to accept the consent agenda?
I make that motion.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second by Director Reynolds. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Item two is moot. Yes, Doug.
Tracy, you want to do the, just in case Shannon needs to leave, do you want to do the officer and the resolution for check signers before the financial presentation?
Let me go down to item four. Take action to elect district officers to serve two-year terms ending in July 2025. Appoint members to serve as assistant secretaries. Appoint members to serve on existing committees or create new committees and make any other appointments necessary. I'll point out, historically, we've done this in July, but we need to amend the resolution on signature cards so Bob can be an assistant.
Right.
Be also be included on it.
Right.
So at Doug's recommendation, I just brought it into this month so we can take care of everything now. Anybody have a nomination for president?
I nominate Tracy.
Shannon nominates me.
I'll second that.
You'll second that. Do I hear any other nominations? Do I hear any other nominations? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Do I hear a nomination for vice president?
I'll nominate Shannon Knave.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second by Tim. Do I hear any other nominations? Do I hear any other nominations? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. I will ask this because he's the next senior member. Tim, you want to continue to be secretary or you want to give it off to somebody else?
Keep my seat if that's fine with all.
That makes me no difference, but I'm doing you the courtesy of asking. Shannon's a new boy. We're just going to railroad him. Do I hear a nomination for secretary?
I nominate Tim.
Motion by Director Knave. Do I hear a second?
I'll second it.
Second, Director Reynolds. Any other nominations? Any other nominations? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Item five.
Oh, before we move on, still under item four.
Yes.
If you notice just under this on the screen, I've got a recommendation. We need – I would prefer or I would recommend that somebody make a motion to appoint all the remaining directors as assistant secretaries.
Okay. Makes sense.
Yep. That's the next item is not possible fully.
Without it.
Right.
Okay. I got ahead of you.
Yeah.
Sorry. And the reason we do that is we have a two-signature requirement on checks of a certain size. And sometimes some of us are out of pocket where they can't find us, and staff can get to any board member to sign as an assistant secretary.
Right.
So that's why we do this. So I need a motion to designate the remaining five members of the board as assistant secretaries.
So moved.
Motion by Director Watts. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second by Director Nave. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
And
now item five.
Right. And just to clarify for Director Lusk, anything under a certain size, I can sign the checks, but anything of a certain size, I require a second signature. That's why we do that. And then go ahead, Tracy. Sorry.
It's a bit of check and balance.
Right.
And on some things where they've got some lead time on a check, Ann mails them to me, and then I mail them, sign them and mail them back. But some checks we've had to expedite, and we've had to divert staff members to drive to Granbury or Nocona to get checks signed. Right. So it makes it a little bit easier. Item five, which is discussion and action to adopt resolution 23004, designating persons authorized to disperse funds by check, draft order, or other instrument on behalf of the district. That simply is the resolution naming the three officers as we've elected them tonight and the designation of assistant secretaries. So I hear a motion to adopt the resolution.
I like that motion.
Motion by Director Reynolds. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second by Director Nave. Any further discussion? All in favor?
I have a further discussion, but I will reserve that as a possibility of it being more of a logistics as pertaining to reading of the signatures, that there should be a certain items that the name is printed. But that's more of a something to discuss.
Something you can discuss with staff about?
Yes.
Okay.
You understand what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Print the name?
Yep. Sometimes a signature is not readable.
Legible.
My signature's not.
The question is.
Mine's pretty bad.
The point is, I'm not necessarily saying on this particular documents, but on certain other documents, the name of the individual who signed it may need to be typed
underneath
or printed
underneath it.
Right. This is just for checks, but yeah, I got you.
Yeah. So I'm bringing that up for discussion for the sole purpose of just. We write a check for $1 million and it's got a scribble on it. I think it should say, who wrote that check for $1 million?
Right.
You understand where I'm coming from?
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is the time or place to put it in, but I want it to be reviewed by whoever needs to look at it.
Why don't you visit with Brian on this?
Yeah.
And see what's, and visit with our auditor as well.
Right.
And see what they.
So that just for
recommend
point of clarification.
Right.
Okay. All right. Now then, any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. I'm going to go back to item four just a little bit on the committee deal. I believe in your agenda packet was included a list of the current committee assignments. I'll make those next month if you have preferences and want to move around or whatever.
Did you want to do what we talked about and make them? So our bylaws only require that we have one committee, and that's the finance committee. Everything else is just at the appointment of the chair. What you and I had talked about is if we wanted to just maintain the finance committee and then possibly have maybe like an executive committee that would meet maybe quarterly. And then appoint other committees as necessary.
And I will raise a question because I'm as guilty as some others because I chair a couple, at least one of those. How many committees have met in the last year?
And that was
basically
our.
We haven't. We have not been using the committee system.
Right.
Now, having said that, Director Michael was talking to me before the meeting of something that would fall under the education committee
field.
And I have no problem with them, you know, getting with Doug, getting with staff, and coming back and bringing recommendations to the board on something we need to do in that area. And that may be one area where we want to continue keeping a committee semi-active basis.
And that's up to you guys, because, you know, the way our bylaws are written, the board president can – it doesn't even have to be at a board meeting. You know, the board president could call me and say, hey, I think we need an education committee, and I want this director, this director, and this director, and this director on it. And I could reach out to them and say, hey, y'all want to do this? So it doesn't require any action, doesn't require – it's just the appointment of the board. Our thinking was, you know, these committees aren't meeting. You know, the finance committee is the only one that our bylaws require that we have in place at all times. So just some thought.
And oddly enough, is we're not required to have a rules and bylaws committee.
No. And we really don't need one except occasionally.
Yeah. So in any case, consider that, think about it, and give me some feedback for next month. It'll be an agenda item on next month to set up standing committees. Doug's thought was that the executive committee would be the three officers and the general manager,
right,
which I can see that one handling some of the policy and personnel issues,
right,
type things. But we haven't used our committees. The well monitoring committee has done by email strings,
right,
and stuff, I think. But the others have not.
So. Right.
That's what it says about the staff.
It actually says a great deal of positive about the staff. I do think education may be one that we may need to let them be more active, because that's an area where we can do some things.
Right.
And expand. Merry Christmas, Natalie. Where are we hiding? So, but, you know, we've got. I want the board to ponder that and decide how we want to proceed on that part. So that's why that was on here. And Director Nave, if you need to leave at any point, feel free. Item 3, presentation and discussion regarding the annual financial report for the year ending December 31st, 2022, and take necessary action. Have we got her online?
Was. I don't know where she – hold on. I don't know where she went. There she is. There you are, Kim. I've just set it up so you can – let me make sure I did. Yes, you can share your screen if you would like.
Okay. Oh, because you're sharing, I can't share.
Ah, yes. There you go.
All right. Okay. First, I want to thank y'all for allowing me to do the audit again this year. As always, Doug and Ann and their team there are wonderful to work with.
Bear with me, Kim. I got to move it over to the other screen on my computer.
Oh, sure.
Which is not letting me do.
I wonder if I need to do... Did that work better?
No, it's not letting me move it. Hold, just bear with me, guys. I just requested control. You.
Oh, okay. There you go.
You have an Apple computer?
No.
No, it's not. There, no, no, no. Just being really slow. Come on now. Try this again.
Okay.
One more time. I'm going to put this over here. Now share your screen.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. That worked. Here we go.
Yay. Okay. Okay. So I do want to say a big thank you to Anne and her team, and of course, Doug for helping us complete the audit. As well, since they are not represented here today, I want to thank my team. I now have an excellent team underneath me that helped me complete the audit. So I want to give them their due as well. We always ask for lots and lots of stuff, and then we take a month, and then we ask for lots of more stuff. So we appreciate the patience with our process and allowing us to get through the audit without any major issue. So we appreciate that. I'm going to scroll through and kind of highlight some just a few small changes that we made during the year, as well as go over high-level numbers. And if anyone has any questions, please feel free to interrupt. I will start, of course, with our opinion. I'm going to zoom in here on these first two paragraphs. You did receive an unqualified opinion, which is the highest level of assurance that we can give. It means there were no material uncorrected misstatements in the financials. As we scroll down. And again, I think I highlighted this last year, but just to point out, starting last year, this was a new format for the opinion for our report. And it does go into great detail that it has in the past about the responsibilities of management versus the responsibilities of the auditor. So if anyone's ever interested on who's responsible for what, this does go into more detail than it has in the past. And going through the next area is the management's discussion and analysis. I won't go over this in detail except to say that it is prepared by management. And it is the only place in governmental financials typically where you will see comparative information. It's just meant to provide an overview of the year and then an outlook for coming years. To the basic financial statements. I'm just going to briefly mention these first two. These are what we refer to as your government-wide financial statements, and they are prepared on a full accrual basis, so similar to a for-profit. So they include things like your capital assets and your long-term debt. The only thing I'll mention about these is this line right here, this net pension asset. So in most entities, this is listed as a net pension liability because their pension is underfunded. So I only want to highlight this to say that you do have an asset position in your pension as of 12/31/22. So that's a good thing. So just highlighting that for you there. And that's really the most I'll say about these first two because you are used to reviewing your information and your regular financial statements more on the fund level, which is what I'll go over next. So I just want to mention those because they are there. So this is going to be your balance sheet at the fund level. So this is on that modified accrual basis of accounting. So you don't see any of those long-term items, your capital assets, anything related to your pension. So this is more what you're used to seeing on a monthly basis, which shows that you do have total assets as of 12/31/22 of $5.6 million. You have total liabilities of $164,000 for a total fund balance of $5.5 million. And you've got your approved categories of your committed and assigned funds there, which is in a footnote later that I'll highlight. And then your statement of revenues, expenditures, and changes in fund balance, similar to your income statement in the for-profit world. Got here your revenues for the year of $2.3 million, your expenditures here of $2 million, and that gets you back to the fund balance at the end of the year of $5.5 million. And then there are these two little reconciliations that are included in between these two statements. All that does is reconcile these statements that I went over in detail back to those first two. So it just shows you the differences in the accounting treatment between those two sets of statements. The next section is the footnotes, and this goes over in provides some background and accounting policy information about the district. Footnote 2 is going to be the biggest one. It's going to list in detail all of the accounting policies and how those numbers in those statements are derived. The only one in footnote 2 that I want to point out this year is going to be right down here, implementation of new accounting standards. GASB did issue a new statement, number 87, as it relates to leases, where now items that were formerly recognized as operating leases, where you expense your rent as it's paid, those are now required to be capitalized, and you record an asset for the right to use that equipment or building or whatever it is, and a liability associated with all future rental payments. So you do not have any lease agreements that meet the criteria. I just wanted to highlight that change in accounting standard in case that's anything the board is considering entering into in the future, that now that will go on your balance sheet. It used to just be if there was like a bargain purchase option, it would go on your balance sheet, but that has changed now to where any lease agreement longer than 1 year for a tangible equipment goes on your balance sheet as an asset and a liability. So just wanted to highlight that change because it's a pretty big change in accounting standard. So then the next footnote, another pretty big one here related to your cash and investments. There was $3,234 that was not collateralized. Again, I think, you know, we've talked about this in the past. That's just related to interest that has accrued on your CDs over that $250,000 FDIC limit. So it's not that material, but I am required to disclose it to you. The only other thing I wanted to highlight is your fund balance classifications. So as we've discussed in the past, that I know y'all have a separate amount that is committed related to an operating reserve. However, under GASB, it does not meet the qualifications for committed funds. So we don't include that for financial reporting as committed. So that's the only difference you'll see here between the resolution that you pass in November and how we report it in the financial statements. And then about a 10-page footnote regarding your retirement plan, if you're curious how those numbers are derived, what the actuaries use to calculate that liability, all that information can be found here in footnote 9. And then in the back, we have your budget to actual, which shows you did have a favorable variance in your revenues of $500,000, primarily related to your well registrations and your semi-annual income. And you also had a favorable variance in your expenditures of about $268,000. And then in case that footnote wasn't enough, you do have several schedules in the back that show historical trends related to your pension. And some footnotes related to that as well. So those were all the things that I wanted to highlight. Any questions or comments?
Board have any questions of the auditor?
Pam, I've got one.
Sure.
I'm sure Doug has visited with you too. We have a number of CDs that are, in today's market, mediocre interest bearing.
I'd say less than mediocre.
Well, I was trying to be polite. What's your recommendation we do with those? Do we just wait till they mature, or do we go ahead and cash them out, take the little penalty, and reinvest it, or it's amount to double or triple the rates to some of them?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I want to caveat my answer with the fact that I usually try to keep myself away from finance questions. I know people often lump accounting and finance together, and the way I describe it is accounting looks in the past and finance looks into the future. And I would qualify this in the finance question. So obviously it would be whatever best serves the board, and if you have an investment committee to discuss it. I do know for a fact, and actually one of the questions we asked as a part of the audit was related to the investment earnings given the increase in interest rates in the market right now. So I would definitely at least consider what kind of rates you can get out there and how that compares to the penalty. Because I know we, I'm on a board of another organization, and we recently got, I think it was like a 4.5% interest rate on a CD, which was, seems unprecedented in based on interest rates you've been able to get in the past. So it's definitely something to consider. And one of the things that I've mentioned in the past as well, I think, is related to this, the CDARS program, or CDARS.
It's, right.
It's an acronym. And so they will actually, you know, you that one bank will go and basically shop those CDs for you so that they're all collateralized, but you're only dealing with that one bank that's holding them for you. Well, so that's an option as well.
Let me rephrase the question.
Okay.
If we did cash out CDs and we would incur a penalty or a lost interest out of it, are you going to ding us on next year's audit?
Absolutely not.
My concern with some of the penalties are actually pretty good size because it's, you know, interest accrued over so much and because of the size of the CDs. And because most of our CDs are set up where the interest is sent to us to put in our checking rather than rolled back into the CD to keep them under the 250. My concern was that the penalty would come out of the principal and may look odd.
Yeah. So from an audit standpoint, we would obviously want whatever documentation. I mean, so we just have to verify what actually happens. So as far as it looking odd, it would be a matter of the best way to report it. And depending on the materiality, it could even just be included in your regular expenditures. But if it was a significant amount, we would want to have a separate financial statement caption for that because it can fall in the category of like an extraordinary event. Like if it becomes material, we would say, well, that's a lot of expense that they don't normally incur. So we would want to highlight that in the financial statements.
Right.
So, but it wouldn't necessarily be, it wouldn't be a ding. It would be, we would probably have to call attention to it. So it's a matter of, you know, being prudent with the money you have.
Right.
And that would be the only concern, is the prudence of it and not necessarily it being a finding, right?
Well, you know, right now we did just buy a new CD for 5.1%. And then our ICS account is at 5.1% as well. So we're getting better, but there's a lot of CDs that are like 0.2,
right.
0.1.
Right.
But we looked into the penalties, and the penalties are actually, you know, more than I felt comfortable paying
right.
as the investment officer. So,
right. And that's it's a hard question for me to answer because I don't know what those penalties are and
right.
all of that. So it's a, you know,
right.
But it wouldn't be a problem for the audit.
Right. I think, and this is kind of outside the audit, and my, right. my issue and my concern is as the investment officer, it makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable paying those types of penalties, basically out of the principal whenever, you know, again, we're not a private institution, right? The number one right. priority of our investment plan is protect the principal.
Yes. Which is a requirement under the Public Funds Investment Act.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm going to circle back just a minute on the, what was mentioned about the checks earlier. And again, I know you're going to consult your attorney too, but from a control standpoint, a suggestion regarding the signatures where a name isn't necessarily obvious is to have all of your check signers do, like have a signature card almost that's not necessarily electronic signatures, but a record of all the signatures that someone holds there at the district. So that if there is a question, there's something to match it back to.
Right.
So just a suggestion from an auditor's perspective, so that you've got everyone's printed and signed names on record. And then you just all have to be consistent in your signatures. So just an idea on that as well.
Board, have any other questions of the auditor?
If not, I believe we need a motion to accept the audit.
Yes, please.
I'll make that motion.
Motion by Director Micah to accept the annual financial report as presented. Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Second by Director Nave. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Kim.
All right. Thank you all. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks, Kim.
Do we have anything on investment report for this month?
No, sir.
Okay. Item 8, review line item expenditures and adopt budget amendments, including moving assigned funds from Monitor Well Drilling Fund to the 2023 budget and take necessary action. Doug?
Yeah, this is just last year. The board approved the drilling of that test well, monitor well, down in the Brock area in an amount not to exceed $150,000. They finished up. We've got all the invoices. We've actually paid them out. We just need to move money from assigned funds into the budget to cover those invoices. And the amounts on the table in front of you. And my recommendation is to approve the budget amendment as presented.
Have a motion from Director Watts. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Second by Director Nave. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Item 9, management report on administrative and operational issues. Doug?
Yeah, just a few things. Of course, I mentioned last month that we'd have interns starting. We've got our three interns here, Eva, Kira, and Leo. They've been working. Unfortunately, I started them off the summer basically cleaning up files, so there's that. They've got two giant bags of just papers that were unnecessary and have been scanned and saved that were cluttering up our file cabinets, but they've also spent at least one, if not two of them, every day are going out with either Blaine, he's right in the middle of well monitoring right now, measuring water levels, or one of the other field staff. And then we've got some other work forms starting on. They'll be here the rest of this month and rest of next month and a little bit into August.
Cool.
So Eva and Kira are from University of North Texas.
Yay, Maine Green, finally.
And hey, Natalie's from UNT.
Not so much. Well, I know, but I mean, this building is infected with purple poo.
And then Leo's from Tarleton. So
I know. Actually, had two of the purple poos out of Nocona here. So, but I've got a son that graduated from there, so I can give Doug heck. I'm glad to have all of you here. Quick question. You had them going through the files. Did the records retention officer educate them on that particular wonderful governmental regulation?
No, we didn't really talk about that.
You need to introduce them to stuff like that.
Yeah, I know. I did. Have you guys watched the Open Meetings Act and all that training yet? They watched the open meetings, the in open records request training. But because everything they're going through is scanned and filed, so yeah. It's just redundant. There's no reason to keep a paper copy anymore.
Anything else on your general manager's report?
Don't believe so.
Question for you, and as the board knows, I serve on them. Regional Water Planning Group for Area B. Doug's my alternate. He serves on C and G both, don't you?
C, and then I'm alternate on G.
A situation has arisen dealing with the data the Texas Water Development Board is trying to force feed the regions, as in the population estimates are horrendous. Region B had a big mouth director. You can take a guess. Raised some questions at their meeting last week. Was it Monday the email came out or Tuesday?
I think it was Monday.
TWDB responded. Among the one of the key items was in there was that by their board policy, you cannot use the state funds to pay the consultants to challenge the state numbers. Ponder that one a little bit. It is entirely probable that Region B and or some other regions will propose, and Region B actually adopted numbers that did not
that were not the state's, they may be rejected. And it may come down to the point of needing to present the information and having consultants on scene in a meeting in Austin. The reason it comes before us is the primary concern in Region B. They show a population decline over the next 50 years in Montague County. Just off the new water well projections, it's over 4,000 people additional each of the five decades. And we use those numbers to project how much water is needed for the next 50 years. And this is one of those areas where if you underestimate, you can't fix the problem. And it's a bad one.
Yeah, the state's projections for Montague, Wise, and Parker are all really, really bad. Hood's actually not bad. They didn't. And largely it's based on – sorry, Tracy.
Go ahead.
Largely it's based on census undercounts, right? The census, the 2020 census just was not great.
The state used the census data, which was very good up until now.
Right.
But this particular census had a lot of issues.
And in Montague County, they're not capturing any of the growth that's happening. In Wise County, they're not capturing the rolling V. In Parker County, they're not capturing any of the development that's happening in the east side of the county. It's Parker County alone, the sheer number is absurd, what their projections are versus what reality is.
And then visiting with Doug before the meeting, it was, how do we do this? If the region cannot pay the consultants and the issue is Montague County, that is our area.
Right.
We may need to come to the board to at least cover the consultants' expenses and stuff.
Right.
Just throwing it out there. Well, and I mean, we can do a presentation sometime on regional water planning.
Right.
And how critical it is.
Fortunately for Region C, which is Wise and Parker County, we've got the recent study from Friesen Nichols.
Right.
So that we've got a in-depth study. Region B, they did, you know, the consultants up there really pulled together some good information from, you know, tap increases, you know, number of taps for each of the public water systems, looked at plats that have come through the commissioner's courts, look at new well registrations, and clearly shows that, you know, obviously not to the scale of, you know, Parker, but clearly Montague County is growing. And if you ever spend some time out there, you'd see it. But yeah, it's an issue. It's kind of frustrating to hear the state's response to providing them hard data showing that the population is not decreasing .
And we, Doug, if you don't mind, if you would forward the email to the board so they can see it.
Right.
TWDB did not take kindly to somebody questioning their numbers.
Right.
And your president is a stubborn son of a gun. But I was not the only one. There was other board members from Region B, same thing. It was, their projections were such that the city of Wichita Falls cannot justify Lake Ringgold if we accept them. Which, if you remember during the drought of record, Lake Wichita Falls was 90 days from having 150,000 people without water. So, just the Montague County numbers alone flipped it from, I believe it was from down 38,000 after 50 years to up 44,000 after 50.
Right.
So it may come back to where we need to provide some funds.
Right.
But I just feel obligated to let you guys know this is on the table so you can ponder it and see what we can and can't do, et cetera. But it is Montague County. It is part of our district.
Right.
And we currently feel like the Friesen Nichols study would work for Region C.
I do. Depending on what they say. So the problem with Region C and in Region B, it's – again, it's all over the state. The fight with Region C, and here's, and this is the state that the Water Development Board's policy is they present these population projections, and they'll let the planning groups kind of manipulate these numbers within a region, right? So Region C is huge. It's basically the entire Trinity River Basin down to, you know, two or three counties south of the Metroplex, but getting to move population from Dallas, Tarrant, you know, Collin, Denton County outwards is going to be almost impossible to get done. They don't really let you go up above and beyond their regional total. It's I understand where they're coming from, but it's a flawed process. So, but it's really important. I think in Monte County, it's especially important because it's, you know, what's the point of the state spending all this money on these regional water plans if it's just absolute garbage, you know?
My gut is Monte County is where Wise County was 20 years ago.
Right.
And we've seen what's happened in Wise County.
Right.
And if you do not plan now for the water needs 50 years out, you may never be able right. to catch up.
And for those of you that maybe don't know, the importance of these plans is for water providers that are political subdivisions of the state, MUD, SUD, cities, the Water Development Board offers a great source of funding for water projects, right? They're loans, but they're extremely low interest loans. And a lot of that money is tied to projects that are identified in these regional and state water plans. So if you've got a plan that's the point of the plan in a nutshell, the regions are tasked with identifying current water supplies, groundwater, surface water, reuse, whatever, identifying water demands, so municipal demands, irrigation demands, commercial, all that stuff, projecting it out, and then developing water management strategies or projects to meet future needs, future shortages. And these projects that are in the plans end up getting funding from the Water Development Board. So if you lose potential to a lot of cheap funding for projects if they're not in the plan, and you can't put these projects in the plan if there's no shortages shown, right? So it's, you know, maybe for us specifically as a district, not that big a deal, but for some of the water providers in our counties, you may be tying their hands and not giving them access to some cheap funding for projects in the future by not having legitimate numbers.
And I'll ask Kyle, he may or may not know. How many individual landowners in Monte County have as many or more acres than the Rolling V? I can think of four real quick. There's probably 10. And all it takes is one of those 10,000 lot coming in there, and somebody's going to have funding. But if the region plan doesn't show a shortage over the decades, they can't even get in. They can't even get in the door.
Do they even count the number of second homes there in Monte County?
Yeah, it's considered a residential tap. But
it's questionable whether or not they count those.
They did not appreciate having the numbers questioned, Bob. I mean, it. And Doug will tell you, I tried to ask some pointed questions. Among them was, will you accept our numbers if we can show you hard data? Well, come down and talk to our staff. And the other one was, and the board, Region B, adopted these population numbers based on the engineers' corrections, the Monte County numbers that turned from a population decline to a population increase. They adopted it. And I specifically asked, we adopt it, you reject it, what's the appeal process? And I got no answer. And
so the way it'll play out, and it's just like the way it'll play out, Tracy, is before the Water Development Board staff presents those numbers of recommendation for the Water Development Board for their directors
right.
to adopt, they'll make that recommendation public. And so at that point in time is when we would need to, if they're not going to recommend something that's reasonable, that's when we would need to go have a sit down meeting with them.
So, and that's the point. We may need some money,
right?
Because
and it wouldn't be a lot
gonna,
of money.
They're not going to listen to the president of our board, or to me as the designated loudmouth. I'll say it. They're going to listen to consulting engineers.
Right.
Well, Friesen Nichols is the lead consulting engineer on this plan, and I will tell you that and Simone Keel, who a lot of you know. Man that's replaced her on for Region B, he was pretty upset
right.
at everything that was happening. So I think Fritz and Nichols would step in as well. And they carry some credibility in Austin.
Right.
But it's one of these, and oddly enough, you never think in the planning process something being critical, but this potentially could be.
Right.
If we show a water surplus for 50 years based on the state's numbers, and we have five rolling Bs try to go into Montague County in the next 20 years, there's no funding. No low interest funding.
Right.
So anyway, I just thought, I felt like the board needed to know this was on the back burner. It's serious enough that I thought Doug was going to throw up back there. And Doug used to have this job to be a liaison for you were three regions, right? Four. He spoke up, thought I'd fire him, but no. He nearly got a standing ovation from our board. So, in any case, I just wanted you to be apprised of that, so not be surprised later and go, what's this about? Don't know how much we're talking about, probably not that much, and not considering our budget. So, nothing else on management?
Sir.
General counsel, I assume Brian's online. He's being very quiet.
Brian is online. Can you see me or hear me?
Both.
Both.
Unfortunately.
Thanks so much. Well, Doug included part of this in his general manager's report. You know, we had a successful legislative session. There were a number of bills passed that impact the district, a couple of which we're going to have to address in rulemaking, including the ability of folks to petition for rulemaking, and that there's another permitting exemption by statute that was added for water wells used to provide water to other water well drilling operations.
Temporary water wells.
Yeah, temporary. The big one, as Doug mentioned in his general manager's report, is Senate Bill 2440, which is the requirement that all counties and all cities require applicants for plat applications that are going to rely on groundwater to do a groundwater availability certification, which by law has to meet the Chapter 230 requirements of TCEQ's rules, which are pretty rigorous. And so, as Doug noted, we've had a lot of, heretofore, whether to require GAC certifications has been permissive for cities and counties. But now, for all practical purposes, it's mandatory for all of them. There is an exception if the proposed subdivision has no more than 10 lots and they have credible evidence available to them, like perhaps there was a GAC done on the, on the place across the street or something, that there's adequate groundwater there. In those situations, they still have discretion on whether to require it, but all other proposed subdivisions are going to have to have a groundwater availability certification. And as Doug noted, and we've mentioned before, the counties will be struggling to figure out how to do that. The cities will too. And I think the best course of action is for the district to come up with an interlocal agreement template that we can enter into agreements with cities and counties to provide assistance to them in carrying out their duties to implement those GAC requirements, because we know about that stuff and they typically don't. And so that's a law. The key thing on that law was that we made the effective date of that thing January the 1st instead of immediate or September the 1st, as with most laws. But it's going to take all through the fall to gear up and get those ready and get our relationships with cities and counties ready to go on January the 1st.
Right.
There's some other Public Information Act and Open Meetings Act stuff that is new, but it's not too remarkable.
I would say on 2440, Brian did a lot of work to get that thing across the finish line. And it's pretty important. I mean, the counties can't waive the groundwater studies anymore. They've got to do them, every county. So,
Brian, you mentioned some changes in open meetings and open records. And I've just got a question for you because I think I know the answer because there is not one. Four of us have been reappointed. Are we required to retake that training?
No.
Open meetings and open records training?
No.
No, I don't think you have to take it, but once.
Right.
But in view of the fact that, in effect, I took it in 2008, I think there's been a number of changes in the laws, and I'm sure the training has changed.
Still don't think, Brian. I still don't think you have to retake it, do you?
I don't think you have to retake it. I'm just wondering if it's advisable that we do.
I don't think they've updated the video.
Only if you want to stay out of the pokey, Mr. President.
Yeah, we can send out the links if y'all want to watch it again.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they've changed the video or not, to be honest with you.
It's been a minute since I've watched it, but I don't think they've updated it in a while.
And it might be a good idea if they're changing the laws, they might update the video. So, just a thought.
I mean,
anyway,
I think the Attorney General's got some other stuff going on.
Yeah. Well, we have an interim Attorney General. All right. Thank you, Brian.
You bet.
I show our next meeting is July 20th, correct?
Correct.
Basically 3 weeks out.
Yes, sir.
Staff's going to have to turn around in a hurry. Anybody, obviously, if you have any new business you need for us to add, contact Doug or myself, and we'll get it on the agenda. Do be thinking about the committee's question and how we want to proceed or whatever. If we want to scale down or just have a list of committees we call in the effect when we need to, whatever. Does anybody have anything else? If not, I show we are adjourned at 4:23.
Thank y'all.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.